I came out to my family probably before I went to Boston in 73, I think. And I was scared fucking to death. Because my mother was a nurse. My dad worked for the railroad. Very working class family. Because they didn't know anything about it. And I was scared to death to come out to them. This is what I told him. I said, I need to tell y'all that I will not be available all the time to come home for Christmas or Thanksgiving to spend it with you. I have my own life. I'm involved with somebody else. And she happens to be Diane Keesley. Now, I prefer women just kind of like you prefer strawberry ice cream. Mm-hmm. Just think of it in that way. And we'll get along just fine. That was it.
Welcome to Last Call, an oral history of New Orleans' disappearing dyke bar scene. I'm Rachel Lee, and you just heard from Marty Youngblood. I feel this real spark of recognition every time I listen to Marty's coming out story. There's the fear of rejection, the building up of courage, then blurting it out, all matter of fact, and finally the relief of getting it over with, knowing that you're not hiding anymore, no matter how your truth is received. When Marty came out in the early 1970s, she had somewhere to come out to. There was a thriving dyke bar scene in downtown New Orleans. It's kind of unimaginable today, where she could go out and hit 4 bars in one night, in walking distance of each other, and be surrounded by other lesbians. Now don't get me wrong, these weren't homogenous spaces. There were divisions and tensions based on race, class, skin color, generation, gender presentation, political beliefs, who asked whose girl to dance, you name it. But one thing that nearly everyone had in common at these bars was that in order to get there, they had to come out. Even if they were living a double life, closeted by day, once they made it inside those doors, they were out. And so for our first podcast, we're sharing some distinct takes on the most familiar of queer narratives, the coming out story. In addition to Marty, you'll hear the interwoven voices of 5 people who came out in the 1970s and 80s. Max Seisler, Diana Panera, Donna Bechet Kilborn, and Juanita Pierre. Oh, and some commentary from Juanita's partner of over 30 years, Leslie Martinez. First up is Max.
So my parents are Reformed Jews and they're very liberal, so, and my mom's, she probably wouldn't admit, you know, say I'm a feminist, but she's definitely a feminist. You know, because back in those days, they meant lesbian if you're a feminist. And no straight woman could say they were feminist. Right? No, I was lucky. I knew that my parents weren't going to kick me out of the house. But I did get the don't ask, don't tell stuff for about 10 years, which was really hard. And I did get the don't tell your sisters. That was really hard. Like, we had some gay relatives who were closeted, and I started figuring out they were gay. And I started telling my mom, guess what? Your cousin's gay. Guess what? Grandma's cousin's gay. And my mom said, yeah, well, we know that. You know, just nobody talks about it, you know? But, I mean, it was, before I came out, I was dating boys in high school because I was really just trying to cover up. And because that's what you did. And because I didn't think dating women was an option. But once I decided, which I was about junior in high school, I decided that no more boys. I was gonna, well, there probably still were a couple boys after that, but for the most part, I was deciding that, you know, I was going to be a lesbian, and I didn't know how it was going to happen, but...
You know, it just happened. I had sort of been very curious because... Back before I left New York, I had, through an odd set of circumstances, I had become the director of a mental health center. And when I got on the board of the directorates of all the mental health centers, I was like one of 2 women. I was the youngest one. I was the only one without a professional degree. But one of the things that they kept giving me was that I was a lesbian, and I thought, what does that mean, you know? And I thought, okay, well, obviously strong, independent, smart, you know, I want to meet them. Where are they? So I had a positive mindset towards it, for sure. And then it was just the easiest thing in the world.
I came out to my family, actually, before my daughter was born. I'll never forget when I told my mother I was gay. She's like, I didn't just fall out of the tree, honey. I knew that a long time ago. She said, I will accept you being a lesbian if you do one more thing. I just want you to be absolutely sure. I want you to go out with a guy and just make sure. Really? So I did. A lot of us back then were bisexual. Uh-huh. Yes, we were bisexual. We didn't want the label. You know, we were bisexual.
And you were married to a man at one point.
15 years, yes. And when your parents told you to do something, you did it. And my mother said I needed a husband. So out of the boyfriends I did, and I did have boyfriends and girlfriends, I selected the one that I thought would be the easiest to live with. He and Leslie became friends. He didn't know anything. And he would tell Leslie, why don't you ask your friend to give me some? And she would laugh and come and tell me, your husband said you need to give him some. And one day I just got tired. I told him, I said, you know, that's not fair to you. I said, that's not fair. I love women. He said, well, I figured something was wrong with you because you always wore the pants in the family. And he had told Leslie that she wears the pants in the family.
Yeah, I mean, coming out as trans, yeah. I think it went easier with my family. You know, my family's older, more experienced, times have changed. My mother's basic reaction was, I got bigger things to worry about. You know, this isn't that big a deal. And I guess, you know, she's knew me my whole life, and maybe once she thought about it and thought about my struggles, it made some sense to her. My sister told me a funny story recently that I didn't remember. She said that, so do you remember when we were kids and the school had this temperature policy that was below 50 degrees and we could wear pants? I said, I don't remember that. She says, you used to wake up every morning and say, what's the temperature? Yeah, it was bad.
I came here in 1969, and I had my first relationship with a woman while he was in Vietnam. And it really wasn't that hard for him to accept it, I think. He just invited when he got home. And we'd been married. We got married in 66 and we got divorced in 68. So pretty much from then on, I never went back to men. I mean, I tried for several months afterwards to prove to myself I wasn't gay. I slept with anybody I could. Bathrooms, bridges, wherever, cars, it mattered. Luckily for me, I did not contact anything. Nor get pregnant, thank you, Jesus.
And it was one of the women that was involved with the Rape Crisis Center also as a volunteer. We were at another friend's house, and I think it was a whole group of us, and we just ended up staying overnight and kind of fell into each other's arms and very natural. It was like a late night. It was like out on a screen porch. I know Donna Meyer was there. A few other people were there. And I do remember a really deep conversation that night about how, and it was Donna, I think, that was saying, who was saying that she now knew a whole bunch of people that would stand up and claim to be lesbians, but she didn't know, but nobody would stand up and claim to, we were talking about victims of rape and especially childhood sexual abuse. But no, you know, people weren't, we were all hiding some histories around that. And so I don't know if there was some way that went really deep into what she was talking about, and I can't put it together any better than that. But then I know we went off, and we went into, Meredith and I went into a bedroom. I think we were snuggling under the sheets and watching television or something, maybe not even, there probably wasn't even a television there, talking. And I think Mary was kind of outside the door. I don't know, but anyway.
After that night with Meredith, mm-hmm. was that like then a sudden change in how you saw yourself, or was it something that had been more gradual?
You know, like I said, it just felt easy. I mean, I knew it was going to present problems to some people, but no, I didn't get any great, thing, but it was just awesome. It was just, of course, this is so much more comfortable and hotter and all those things, you know.
And I was able to take friends of mine over, and my mother would, Mary had gone a couple of times. My mother, we had a big table in the dining room, and you couldn't find a place hardly to put your plates because that she would all go all out if I were bringing somebody or some friends home. You know, she would just tickle me to cook for them. And she went to several gay parties with me and danced and carried on, you know, like a fool. You know, kind of like mother, like daughter. So, not the other way around, but kind of like mother, like daughter. So I had it easy. I was very accepting. My family was very accepting.
We didn't have a problem with that. My father was a Baptist minister, and we really didn't have a problem with that. I find that being honest up front can avoid a lot of issues behind. So we were very much, Leslie's father was so glad to have grandkids because these three kids were his grandkids.
Paula was a probation officer. A lot of these women said their kids would wind up on probation. And, you know, she would see them in the club. And when she saw them in the office, they didn't know each other. Hmm. You know.
How did that feel to have two separate lives?
Horrible. Which was why I didn't do it. Mm-hmm. You know. I was lucky. I was lucky because I was always able to find people who, my family for one thing, was pretty good about it.
There are 12 kids. My mother had 12 kids. So we are just at our lives except every one of us. And I realized they knew when holidays I started getting paper plates, plastic spoons, and plastic cups. And that's when I realized, okay, they know. my sisters and brother, they were tickled with it because the brothers would ask them, they're older than I am, how y'all make love? What do y'all do? And I would tell them, we do the same thing you do.
What did the paper plates have to do with it?
I was gay. And you know, back then,
eat after her. They didn't want to use utensils after her or drink out of glasses after her because they knew she was gay.
And was that hurtful to see that? Or
no, not to me. That was like right before the big AIDS epidemic came out. And it was still foreign to people back then. You know, some people...
That's how it was transmitted.
Yeah, some people thought being gay was a mental disorder. And so it was relatively a new thing, especially to black people. Because certain things we're a little bit behind with. I'm not saying we were stupid or dumb. Certain things we just didn't do that white people did.
You know, I noticed when I was coming out that a lot of my white friends would come out to their families and their families would be supportive or whatever. That wasn't our experience in the black community. My mother accepted me. My father did not. My father put me out. And my mother forced him to let me back in the house. But by that time, I didn't want to come back anyway. So, it was a mood issue. My grandparents never, ever accepted it. We are so careful of who we are when we're black. I have so many friends and family members who have always said and always preached, what you do reflects on us as a whole. You know, and that's one thing white people do not have. You know, if you go out and you do something, it doesn't reflect on the white community. But we're taught from little that what you do on the street or in public reflects on your family, reflects on your race in general. So you don't do anything that you don't want out there. And one of the worst things in our community to do and be is gay.
I was afraid of being rejected by some of my lesbian friends for being trans, and I think instead of being rejected, I kind of started distancing myself from certain people and hanging out. I think I'd kind of started changing, you know, my social circles and stuff, and had less lesbian friends. Because I relate more to living in between than I do one side or the other. And for me, it was a big deal. I didn't want to not be gay anymore. I didn't want to lose, just because I'm trans, I don't want to lose my lesbian identity in some ways, or the things that had been so important to me coming out the first time in my life, and, you know, going to women's music festivals and going to, Michigan. It was also huge. I didn't ever want to have those doors closed down to me. I thought that a lot of lesbians I knew would see me as a traitor, and I think some did. Okay. Lesbians would stop me, particularly in Whole Foods, and they would say, "Why'd you change your name? Why are you changing your name?" And I would say, "Because I didn't think it was anyone's business." I would say, "Because I want to change my name." And they would say, "Are you transitioning?" And I would say, "I'm just changing my name." Because really at that point, I was so new for me, I didn't know what I was doing either. And these were people that were basically acquaintances, part of the lesbian community, and not people I was, close friends with.
So I'm sitting up there on the holiday, and one holiday I say, okay, enough is enough. And my stepdad said, where did we go wrong? And I said, you didn't go wrong anyway. All of my life you've been telling me that the Bible says before Christ walked the earth again that these are things that have to come to pass. You said that roses would bloom in the snow. Men would be lover of men, women lover of women. So who are you not to think that God selected me to perform his prophecy? And that was the end of the paper plates. Because he couldn't fight me with that. Those were his words.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Last Call, featuring, in the order that you heard them, Marty Youngblood, Max Seisler, Diana Panera, Donna Bechet Kilborn, Juanita Pierre, and Leslie Martinez. The episode was produced by Peter Bowling, Free For All, and Rachel Lee, with interviews by Sarah Pick, Bonnie Gable, Sarah Spiegelman, and Hannah Pepper Cunningham. Last Call is an oral history project that includes this podcast, as well as a live performance, an audio archive, and special events. If you'd like to find out more, search for New Orleans Dyke Bar History Project on Facebook or email dykebarneworleans@gmail.com.